one of the lessons learned, I know for us on the healthcare side, is that we demonstrated the ability to do extraordinary amounts, exceptionally high quality work with people working both on-site and remotely, and to do it very, very rapidly in much less time than we would have done it in a non-pandemic type situation, I think. So there was a huge sense of urgency out there. I know that was present on the supplier side and the distribution side, and it certainly was present on the healthcare delivery side.
Welcome to the podcast, hosted by the Journal of Healthcare Contracting. And now, our host, Scott Adams.
Thank you so much for joining the Journal of Healthcare Contracting podcast today. I just got done recording with the two subject matter experts around lab and reopening after being shut down for a period of time, and the conversation is excellent. John Waugh, who is the Vice President of Lab Services at Henry Ford Health System, just is a wealth of knowledge. You're going to get a ton of good information. In fact, that was him at the very beginning, kind of the hook to the entire podcast. But we got into all kinds of things from how they're opening back up to the way that they're strategizing for inpatient and outpatients. And then we also had Dan Romaine on this podcast, who's Vice President of Strategic Sourcing for Cardinal, just to get the kind of the take from a distribution standpoint and a caregiver standpoint, or a lab standpoint, of what's going on and opening back up and getting the country back going. So I hope you enjoy the podcast, and here we go. As this is Scott Adams with the Journal of Healthcare Contracting, and we are having a conversation today around the COVID virus and reopening up labs across America, and some of the key takeaways that some folks that have been open for a little bit have done. I have two great panelists or subject matter experts on today. I have John Waugh, who's the VP of Lab Services at Henry Ford Health System, and Dan Romaine, Vice President of Strategic Sourcing for Cardinal Health. Thank you both for being on the podcast today, gentlemen.
Glad to join.
Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. I'm going to jump right into questions, and I'd like to start with you, John, if I can. If you could tell us or tell the audience a little bit, how is your institution staging out various different types of patients? And what I mean by that is kind of sick versus well, and you know, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, as we were going up the curve, the smart thing to do was to defer elective surgeries and outpatient appointments that were not absolutely essential at that time. And the strategy there was to conserve personal protective equipment, which was in worldwide scarcity at that point in time. And the other was just to make sure that our waiting rooms and areas like that were not clogged up with people who might be more prone to infect each other. And now, as we ride back down the curve here, after the social distancing and all this, it's a big catch-up time period now. So we're actively working to get back thousands of surgical procedures that were elective surgeries at that time. And, 10 weeks ago or so, surgeries that were elective are now maybe not so elective anymore. They may be very, very important. They may be transplants, they may be cancer resections. And so now on a priority basis, we're getting those surgical procedures back in, and we're slowly ramping up our outpatient ambulatory network at this time.
John, what's your strategy for inpatient versus outpatient testing right now?
Well, it has differed. This is an interesting question. Initially, as we were approaching the, kind of riding up the curve part of this, the conventional thinking was that we need to assume that almost all of the patients that we see are positive, and that we need to be, extremely careful, the social distancing, the hand washing, masks when they were available. And, but now, of course, our hospitals were just absolutely full, and they switched over from being medical surgical hospitals to really a full hospital of ICUs and medical beds. And we now are in a position where we've decanted those patients off, and the inpatient population is much lower now with COVID positive patients. And so now the thinking needs to shift back to the opposite of where we were before, that we really should assume almost now that the vast majority of people are negative for COVID-19, because the statistics in the U.S. are only at about 5-6% of the U.S. population overall and actually it's even a little bit lower than that. I think it was 4.1% if you take the U.S. in whole. Had COVID positive disease at some point in time. Great majority of people really are negative. We're in a little bit of a difficult period right now because we see some states lighting back up again, and that will bring the prevalence higher in the U.S. population.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great point. Dana, I'm going to shift over to you if I can for the next question. Can you talk a little bit about how, you know, Cardinal Health has a bird's eye view to changes in demand of various products used for COVID testing. Can you share a little bit about what you've seen as far as demand fluctuation over the last 3 months? I got to imagine it's just been, you know, crazy.
It's definitely been an interesting journey, and a lot of it falls really right on the tails of what John was describing as, you know, as these changes in how our healthcare system was approaching the populations. And you know, if you think early on where there was a very singular focus on testing and not having COVID tests available, we saw this huge rush, almost like a second flu season, as we were trying to provide some answers to patients. And at the same time, this large rush on collection products, right? Swabs, viral transport media, everything that they could get their hands on to just, you know, test as many patients as possible. You go back to March, and that was such an increase. You're talking a sevenfold increase in demand, what we were seeing to pre-COVID rates. And while, you know, as John described, that's come down a little bit, we're still seeing, you know, many-fold increases versus pre-COVID, right? So it's been sustained. It has settled down a little bit as the supply behind it has gotten a little bit better, but it's still 3 to 4x what we were seeing pre-COVID rates in terms of collection supplies, you know, the products needed to, you know, fix the sample, to process the sample. And then ultimately what's changed in that short amount of time is we went from having no COVID tests to now you've got actual tests for the COVID itself entering the market in various forms, right? Some are large platform, some are, you know, individual tests. So it's just created a really interesting 90 days in terms of managing that supply chain.
Dan, it's interesting that the way that you kind of position that. I've talked to a supply chain executive earlier this week, actually, and the way he described it, he says, you know, there's been kind of rolling shortages of things, but within the supply chain, you see it moves. So it might have started with PPE product and then moved to swabs, and then ultimately it'll probably move when we have a vaccine to needles and syringes. Are there product categories out there that have experienced more substantial changes than others, and how's Cardinal Health responded to that?
Yeah, I mean, the short answer is absolutely, and you hit on some of them, right? So from a diagnostic testing perspective, right, the collection products, the products needed to, you know, process the samples have seen extreme pressures. Not just here, but globally. And PPE is another area where we've seen just, you know, extreme pressures on the system as folks are needed, you know, need those products to keep an individual safe and to try to, you know, slow the spread of COVID. So those are, you know, even more than expected, I think, where, you know, the increases are unprecedented. But even within that, you can take it a level down, right? And as you get into the details, there's kind of those, you know, mini shifts, right? So PPE is a great example where it felt like even within that, it was first it was masks, you know, now it's, you know, isolation gowns and exam gloves. And some of it's driven by just the way the products were utilized globally. Some of it's driven by raw materials. So it's such a dynamic environment that it's constantly changing. And it is all about what is that next thing that you need to be thinking of. So to answer your question, right, kind of what are we doing about it? It's, you know, it's trying to gather as much information as possible and start to plan around that, So, you know, you mentioned the vaccines, and that's one that I think a lot of us have been able to look in front of and say, okay, we know this is coming. So how can we be planful and make sure that we're, you know, set up for the best success? So, you know, what can we do to make sure that we've got supply chain continuity? Do we have all the right partners? Are we appropriately stockpiling those right amount of products for that? If you look at the things that we maybe weren't able to plan for because we just didn't know what we didn't know at the time, now we're thinking about, hey, as COVID continues, is there a second wave coming? How do we become less reliant on some of these categories where there's traditionally very few suppliers, or maybe there are product categories that were non-geographically diverse, right? They're really concentrated in a particular area of the country. And, you know, we've all been working really hard to say, you know, who are those other partners out there that we can make sure that we add to the supply chain, whether it's folks that just weren't traditionally, you know, they were making products, but maybe not making them available in our space. So can we partner with them and now have access to greater capacity? And then who are these new players that have capabilities that, you know, just weren't making a product? You know, I'll use Collection Swab as an example. We've had some through the course of this journey, been able to work with some really great partners to just bring totally new products to market where, you know, they were making in one case a product for the dental market that they've been able to modify and turn that into a collection swab. But now we've got this in our bag to say, hey, if demand dramatically increases, our available pool of supplies has just grown that much greater. And those are the kind of things that we're doing to make sure that we're prepared and have access to more products moving forward.
You know, Dan, talking about planning, I think kind of teasing me up for my next question for John. John, how are you thinking about the upcoming respiratory season, especially with COVID likely to, you know, be circulating with common respiratory viruses? What are you guys doing to prepare for that?
Well, we're watching the supplier market very closely here. I think that there's a good likelihood that we could have, a second surge that comes towards us. And typically, seasonal influenza hits about starting point of about December 1st of each year. The coronavirus that we've been chasing here has shown a high degree of transmissibility, and people acquire it in different forms. It attacks them in different ways. So I think it's very likely that we'll have to watch it through the summertime to see if it ebbs a little bit. Obviously, the social distancing has had an impact on the reductions, and now going in the other direction as the states are opening up. But we have had products. I think we'll look to see. There are a number of suppliers right now that are working on multi-target molecular diagnostics in particular to be able to pick up the SARS-CoV-2 target as well as influenza A, B, and even RSV. So we'll have to see. Those are going to have to go through a FDA emergency use authorization process as they come out. But those are attractive products. They will be, again, in worldwide demand and likely on allocation, as we've seen. And so that's a challenge. The traditional history here of influenza testing is point of care testing, where acutely ill patients present for care. So it's not so much the kind of thing where you collect a sample and then send it off to a laboratory someplace to have it tested the next day. It typically is tested where they're trying to make a treatment decision on admit or don't admit or put on Relenza or Tamiflu, some of the antivirals. So in this case, if it presents, if we see influenza season overlapping with another resurgence of coronavirus here, we'll be right back where we were back in March, where we were co-testing influenza A, B to rule out flu, and then going after the SARS-CoV-2 coronavirus as a kind of a second option if patients were symptomatic but not presenting with positive flu test results. So So that's I think the dilemma coming at us is going to be likely worldwide allocation of products that have got multiplex capabilities in there.
Absolutely. Dan, kind of to tag along with that, you know, obviously there's some uncertainty on if slash how the virus will reemerge. How's Cardinal preparing the supply chain, support the future for your customer needs for folks like John and patient testing?
Yeah, so, you know, I mentioned some of this before, but I'll hit on kind of the big three. And, you know, it's working with our existing partners to just understand what is their capacity and, you know, what are they able to produce, and then doing what we can to help, right? You know, we're participating, I would say, differently than we have in the past and partnering differently, whether it's helping them with their logistics or helping them source items. So it's making sure they're able to produce as much as possible and to be as efficient as possible. And then I mentioned some of the other ones, which is truly, what are those new sources of products, right? Who are those folks that, you know, maybe are making collection material or even testing in other markets in the world and making those available within the US market so we just have more options? And then that third is, you know, who are those new players who have an opportunity to enter the space? And when you add it all up, it's just making sure that we've got the right amount of capacity and product available, you know, if and when they're needed here in the fall. You know, you don't know what we don't know. We're all looking into the crystal ball, but our big view of the world is, how do we gain as much capacity as possible so that we have it available to dip into it when we need it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, too, you have emerging markets as well that didn't use some of this stuff before that are now using it. You know, John and I were talking before the podcast started. We both have gotten our hair cut in the last couple of weeks, and all of a sudden you've got, you know, the person getting their haircut and giving their haircut are wearing masks. And so it just, I don't envy the supply chain at this point and the job that you guys have ahead of you. But, and I know, just from an outsider looking in and covering it as the media, that distribution and the manufacturers have done a pretty amazing job given the amount of stress that's been put on you guys in such a short amount of time. John, to come back to you with the next question specific to COVID testing, can you describe, you know, how your testing algorithm works? What's your mix of antigens versus antibody testing and why?
Our philosophy, our first test method up was the CDC method on a Roche LightCycler 2, and we developed that. It was launched by us on the 16th of March, we were the first ones in the state of Michigan to have a test available on that. And it was a very laborious test that required about six different reagents from our supplies from about four different companies. It required extraction reagents for the BioMérieux EasyMag system as well. So it was a very tedious test to perform with a total annual or a total daily output of only about 100 tests per day. And then we went on and actually developed four other methods beyond that. And that was the only thing that really kept us going on this, is that we had to rely on which supply allocation was going to come in from which supplier on any given day, because the supplier networks were really scrambling hard trying to take care of their customers, get in this pressure from the federal level, but at the same time having to allocate products really on a worldwide market. And at that time, some of these products were made in Italy, and Italy was absolutely on fire. And so they just absolutely, as the state started closing down, manufacturers could not even get their staff into facilities to prepare and package products for shipment. So for us, it became managing multiple methods, multiple collection supplies that had to be validated on each of those methods. And a pretty laborious effort, but all of those going through the emergency use authorization from the FDA at that time.
Dan, to come back over to you for a second, throughout the COVID pandemic, there were multiple news stories discussing shortages and items, you know, all over the place from reagents to swabs. What actions have you guys taken as distribution and and even as a manufacturer in some cases, to help solve some of these supply chain challenges for these clinical labs?
Yeah, I mean, I think John did a really great job of just describing the complexity that was taking place globally, right? And, you know, a big part of it was just communication. It was hard for everybody to understand when you have allocation, you know, manufacturers making products, deciding where do they ship it globally on an allocation methodology, enter the government getting the piece of it, comes to Cardinal, we have our allocation methodology. So really some of the hardest parts of all of this were just understanding on a daily basis what products are coming in and what's going out and where is it going. And so I appreciate John bringing that up because it was very unprecedented in terms of that piece of it. It was already adding more complexity to complexity to begin with. Before a little bit, it's just the biggest thing is in terms of just expanding the pie, right? Making sure that we understand what's coming in, helping those folks that were existing to do more and to do it more efficiently. And really where we had some of our biggest successes and more recently are just finding those new and alternative sources and getting them added to our system. You know, and a lot of that's been challenging us to move fast and efficiently to make sure that we're vetting products appropriately. You know, we're launching them into the market and we feel very comfortable with the quality and performance of those. But making them available to customers. So it's, that's really been the biggest part of it is how do we quickly rally around this need and, you know, maximize what we do have and then help prop up those folks who are able to bring more into the marketplace. And I think you see really good examples within the lab space, just like some of the stories you heard around, whether it was PPE and, manufacturers who are switching their product lines from, you know, whether it's, you know, clothing to making masks or even like Ford, you know, what they were doing and examples like that to make ventilators. Those stories existed within the laboratory space as well. And so making sure that we, found those folks and then did what we could to help, you know, make that happen.
Yeah, there's been some amazing stories out there just to listen to and watch and hear about over that to kind of, John, you know, you heard Dan's answer there. Are you guys looking into alternative products for things that are currently preferenced items?
Are you talking about in terms of testing for SARS-CoV-2 or collection supplies or both?
Yeah, collection supplies for the most part.
So for collection supplies, I'll bet you we've evaluated, you know, a dozen different types of collection supplies over the last 90 days on this, because the preferred collection supplies and transport media just absolutely became unavailable. And so, and there were very rigorous requirements by the FDA, typically under their UA process, that you use collection supplies that were validated with that test system. And that, you know, to do otherwise, you would be going off label. Well, what we saw during this very, very difficult time period that all of us have been through here is that the guidance from FDA, the guidance from the CDC, and even our internal practices and guidance from the state levels were changing oftentimes. And there were times that the guidance changed from morning till afternoon. And we had to make adjustments with that. And it was the reason for the changes were that the scarcity of products were just out there and there was a lot of desperation to get testing numbers up and to take care of people that were in vulnerable populations. They might be in nursing homes, they might be on dialysis, try and get healthcare workers back online, first responders. So we did validate a lot of different options. The FDA broadened very widely the gateway because I think they had to at that time and said, you know, you can make your own swabs and put them in saline tubes if you want to do that. Of course, that was, you know, then put you in a separate production mode now of having to obtain swabs from one source, obtain tubes from another source, get saline in them or some kind of transport media, then how to package them together so that they'd be available as a kit that could go to maybe a tent or an area in a negative pressure room or where sample collection could take place. So there was a lot of, just commented on a second ago, there were a lot of backstories of tremendous work done during this whole time period here. So we validated many, many different types of collection swabs, both nasal swabs and nasopharyngeal swabs, which were the ones that were really, really in short supply. And I think for 60 days in a row, every conference call I was on gave some mention to both shortages of PPE and shortages of collection supplies, particularly NP swabs.
That's amazing, honestly, to just think of where we are today from where we were 90 days ago. I know we all say it probably amongst ourselves daily, but it really is. I mean, to think that you've evaluated a dozen collection is just unbelievable to me. Guys, we have just a couple of minutes left. Dan, I'm gonna save this last question, or I saved this last question for you. Obviously, COVID's brought many, many changes, process changes to the healthcare system and the labs. Can you talk a little bit, you know, how some of those changes have happened as well within Cardinal?
Yeah, absolutely. It's just been such a challenging time, right? And we were on a call earlier today, and even just, you know, we've always had pandemic preparedness, and even the definition of that has had to change a little bit, right? When, you know, up until this point, or really for almost the last 100 years, when you're talking about being prepared for a pandemic, it's typically a regional event, right? You're thinking of an earthquake, a hurricane, some type of localized event. Even an outbreak, really in recent memory, has been very, you know, regionalized. And so how you are set up to respond to that is just based on that unique dynamic. So, you know, having something that's truly global in nature and is truly, you know, put this extreme pressure on the system was, you know, has really made us rethink, how do we handle a pandemic, right? Are we really prepared for that? Do we have, you know, the right risk profiles in place? Do we have the right, you know, supplier partners? And so when you think about all of that type of planning down to the portfolio level to say, are we geographically diverse enough? Are we, you know, too concentrated in some of these big players within certain, you know, product categories? We're having to look at all of that, and not just for the short term, but for the long term, right? And just make sure if we're ever in the situation again, we are set up to respond from the pure product perspective. And then internally, just from a process. I mean, you know, as a large organization, you know, as you can imagine, there's just a lot of layers and a lot of controls that are in place. And they're there for all the right reasons, right? You want to make sure that you're vetting quality, and you're making all the appropriate checks and balances to bring a good quality product to market. But in a situation like this, you have to get really creative and push yourself to say, how do we do all those same things, but do it as quickly and efficiently as possible so that we can respond to this immediate need? And that's really what we've had to do internally is just question every step along the way and say, is it what's really necessary, what's not, what's really needed here and what's not, and how do we just do that right amount of vetting and validating so that we can get it out as quickly and efficiently as possible. You know, one of the things that I'm excited about is, you know, we've done things in days and weeks that took months and years almost. And so the challenge for us will be, how do we maintain that same level of speed and efficiency moving forward and not let ourselves go back to that old way of doing things?
Yeah, the conversations I've had over the last couple of months with the distribution folks specifically, like yourself, is it's amazing how you guys have worked together, even in competitive situations, to just move things with speed and efficiency to hotspots, but also to your existing customers that needed the stuff just as bad for, you know, everyday use on things that they've got to have it for. So from me personally, I thank you so much and your organization for what you've done for the healthcare community. And guys, I just thank you both for being on the podcast with me today. I really appreciate the insight, and I'm sure the audience will as well.
It was a pleasure. Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Pat.
Absolutely. I wanted to just take a second here at the end and thank both John and Dan for sharing with us for the last half hour or so. Hopefully you got a couple of pearls of wisdom out of that. I know I did. And it's, given the day and age we're in, sometimes it's just nice to listen to others going through the same things that we are across the country. And so hopefully these Journal Healthcare Contracting podcasts that we're putting out are very much informative, but also a little entertaining and a little bit soothing for you, as we know how hard you've been working the last 3 or 4 months. And before I end this, I would like to very much thank Cardinal Health for being the sponsor of the podcast. We couldn't bring this type of content to you if companies like Cardinal weren't willing to step up and sponsor them. So thank you very much, Cardinal. We hope everybody stays safe. Good luck. And another podcast from JHC will be coming out in the near future. Thank you.